Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of For You From Eve. We are back with another guest episode today. You guys have noticed I've been doing a lot more guest episodes, and I'm so excited about today's episode because I know a lot of you have been messaging me about just being single in your 20s as a woman, whether you got out of a relationship, whether you've never had a relationship, just being very comfortable in your own body, being comfortable in your own company. And I'm so excited to have Annalee here today to introduce herself and talk to you guys about all of this. So Annalee, do you want to introduce yourself and just talk about who you are, what you do, where you're from, all that good stuff?
I would love to. Thank you so much for extending the invitation and having me on. So yeah, I'm Annalee Howling. My role involves doing performance coaching. I work across sports. I work with what you would call an elite performers. So Hollywood actors, CEOs of major corporations. Like I say, I do a lot of work in sports and corporate, done a lot of work with veterans of the armed forces, veterans of the special forces, even here in the UK. And then my sort of day-to-day work, I suppose, revolves more around trauma. And I do a lot of work for sort of single traumatic events and like maybe a bit of a trigger warning, but I think it is important, especially for the population and your listenership we're going to be talking to, is I work a lot in sexual assault. So I'll be working a lot with victims of sexual assault, a lot of women, men, anybody in that arena, and other trauma that people may have experienced. And that can be across the spectrum. So all of these tools and things kind of inform how I work now with my clients and try and make sure I'm utilizing sort of all of my skills and experience and my own life experience as well, and bring that into helping anyone however I can.
Mm-hmm. And speaking about how you kind of use your life to help other people, what has kind of made you want to do this? What has made you want to help other people go through this and kind of your story on getting into this journey?
Sure. So maybe if I start with the story, because I think it'd be really relevant, especially like you say about 20s and stuff like that. So I had like an absolutely catastrophic burnout at 29, and 29 seems to be a bit of an age for it. Like I've been in quite a few podcasts recently. Everyone's like, yeah, yeah. And yeah, I had this big corporate job. I was really successful. I had a great role. I had a great, you know, standing and all the rest of it in the organization, but I was just so unhappy. And I had all the stuff that you were sort of supposed to have then, you know, like I'm nearly 43. So, you know, so this is like quite a long time ago, but you know, you've got a big job and a nice salary and you can get a house with a mortgage and you've got a nice car. And, you know, you're meant to be aspiring at that time or so it felt for these things and this stuff and having some security. And there is a little bit of nuance to this, which is I grew up in a household of violence. Unfortunately, I had a very violent father. And so a lot of my drive to create security for myself was because I didn't have that like fallback option. I couldn't just like go home. That wasn't an option. So there was an additional kind of, you know, that race to kind of like just make myself safe. And with that, you get a huge side helping of imposter syndrome, you know, the good old inner critic in there about, you know, chasing as fast as you're running, you've got that chasing you. So I think all of this really contributed to this great big walloping burnout. But the main factor for that was I was doing a job and I was existing. I wasn't living in my life. I mean, my health was bad, but there was no one reason why. You know, I was unhappy, but I had all these things. And on paper, it would have looked kind of perfect in inverted commas. And I was really good at looking perfect and pretending to be perfect and, you know, getting everything done. And I was just miserable and breaking from the inside out. And it wasn't until my body stopped me, which is kind of what burnout usually is. We've been maybe missing or ignoring some signs on purpose. And that floored me. And I had a really amazing session with a friend of mine who I talk about a lot, Nikki, who has Electric Woman, which is a wonderful female focused coaching business. And she did a visualization session with me, a coaching session. And this is like a long time before coaching was cool. It was all a bit woo-woo and weird. It was like, oh, what's coaching? And anyway, it was such a profound, impactful session. And some of the things that she said to me then in my 20s absolutely came true, including me having one daughter. There was sort of not a man in the picture. These are things that like, I mean, okay, you can say probability, but I couldn't have picked that, you know. And so many things ended up coming true, and it was so profound, the impact on me, that I was like, right, I want to follow this path. This is clearly something that I want to get involved in. And so that's, I started in coaching, and then it's sort of progressed through to where it is today. But as part of that work, and I'm always trying to learn something else, like in service of my clients, you know, what is the latest research or what is the latest modality to bring into my work, I came across the trauma work. And that to me was the missing puzzle in my own journey, definitely. I mean, coaching had taken me a really, really long way and had really got me to sort of like engage in vulnerability and had got me out of that bad job and that bad industry away from a burnout. But it hadn't gone into the wounds. It hadn't gone into the repeating patterns. It hadn't gone into self-sabotaging behaviors or anything like that, or really even just my authenticity, if I'm being honest. I don't think I knew how to embody that. And that's where sort of doing the trauma work changed all of that for me, changed the whole story. And then that's why that's part of my practice now.
Yeah. And when you were at that point where you were trying to kind of escape your home at that point and escape, you know, what you went home to, did you have anyone to go to? Did you have that safety net?
So not in the regards to, I mean, lots of friends and yeah, other family members. So when I was like older in my 20s and I had, like I say, my own, like, you know, renting a flat and then buying a house. So, and my friends have been my family for a very long time and I'm very fortunate. It's been marvelous for me. So, and I, other wonderful people in my life. But yeah, there was definitely this, that was definitely a factor that really contributed towards me running.
Yeah.
You know, and you can't keep sprinting a marathon. You know, you need a finish line or you will collapse. And that was what my burnout was and what so many people's burnouts are.
Yeah. And a word I want to highlight that you used is security. That corporate life for a lot of people is just security. It's knowing where your next paycheck is coming from. And even for me, I'm graduating school in December and I'm like, do I want to do corporate because I want to be secure? I want to know where my next paycheck is coming from. I want to know that I can afford a car in January, you know? Do I want that? Or do I want to take the risk and go all in with, you know, my own business and see what can come of it and see, because obviously I can grow so much more doing my own thing. And I think for a lot of, not even just women, but even men in their 20s, they struggle with, you know, not doing enough. I think, especially honestly for men, I feel like men are very in the mindset of, you know, obviously knowing that they want to provide one day, majority of men at least. And it's like, they feel like their first job out of college, it's like they're not making enough money and there's all this pressure to, I have to start my own thing. I have to do my own thing. What is your advice for people coming out of college, people that are maybe a few years out of college or at their first corporate job that just feel like where they are not going to grow enough, and that added pressure of kind of financial pressure?
So like, there's a few things in there. It's a really beautiful question. And I agree with you. I think men do have it quite hard in corporate, just because when you interact or your social functions or networking events, the first thing men and other people ask men, what do you do? Mm-hmm. Not who are you, not what you're interested in, not tell me about your family or your passions, or, you know, how, generally speaking, I'm being quite generalistic, but how females might connect, or even I love your sweater, you know, what yeah. do you do, right? What do you do? And then you give me the answer about what you do, and I tell you what I do. And then we go into like this sort of holding pattern, you know, like aircraft, like we go into a holding pattern of who's the partner at the fund and who's the, you know, got this certain job at a bank. And I do think that's quite difficult for men. And I think that can bleed into like toxic masculinity and some other mental health areas as well. But yeah, I do think there is a really big pressure actually to be sort of autonomously successful, but yet, you know, they have these sort of material trappings. And it's finding that piece in between that's just true to you is what I would say, because you can, the success ladder can be a bit of a trap in what do you actually need. And I think like the lockdown was quite helpful for that, to get us to reassess what do I need to feel successful. And that might be a certain amount of money to pay a certain amount of bills, or have an apartment that you can then put out on Airbnb so you can travel every month. Like, what does wealth feel like for you? And having gone through what I've gone through, and some advice I would say is have some foundations, whatever that is to you. So maybe you do work for a bit, so you've got a property, so you can always leverage that asset, whatever you may choose, you know, or have some education like you have, so again you can leverage that and take it into something else. Or, you know, do a startup but keep connected, do some work in a charity but an organizational part of a charity, so that you've got corporate experience, you know, and you're volunteering. So I would say kind of hedge your bets, but make sure that you're constantly and consistently learning and adapting, because my tastes have changed, you know, my tastes in relationship have changed, of course my taste in work has changed, and I've had my own business now for 12 years and the business it is now and the career I'm about to go into. We were just talking off air. I've got a really big project that I can't quite talk about yet, which is really exciting. But my almost identity for work and how I'm going to be referred to is about to change, probably forever. So what I would say is, like, create as many opportunities for yourself as you can. And that just gives you choice. Mm-hmm. So just make sure you, and don't be, best piece of advice I'm going to give everyone in their 20s, never take directions from someone that hasn't left home, because you get a lot of advice and often it's really well-meaning, but also, and I'm sure we're going to come onto this, you can be maybe in a friendship group, a peer group, even people you're working with, well-meaning family members that simply haven't got the life experience as you will, not able to maybe be in the position of decision or choice that you are. And then people are either afraid because they're worried about you, which is loving, but they're also maybe a bit afraid about what it says about them if you make a big change. And I think when I think back to my 20s, it still happens now, by the way, but when I think back to my 20s in particular, I think that's quite a big time for that, because everyone's kind of trying to find themselves, exactly to your question. Like, am I a startup entrepreneur? Do you know what? Do I want to suck it up and go into banking for 10 years and be mortgage free and, you know, retire early? Yeah. Like, there is no right or wrong, but I think there comes with that maybe a layer of whether it's competitiveness or just comparison. I think that's a bit heavier where you are now.
I agree. I feel like also just the way that society is now, like, people, they say like the 20s are the new 30s. Like, the pressure that's normally put on people in their 30s is being put on people in 20s, because a lot of people want to start their life earlier. They want to get married earlier, have kids earlier. And like, everyone has a timeline. And I come from a very traditional Middle Eastern background where most of the women in my community are getting married in their early 20s and having kids before they're 25. And so it does add that kind of sordid pressure. And I think for a guy especially, it's a little bit more difficult because you stereotypically have the role of being the provider and making sure you have a certain income before even wanting a relationship. And I love the advice you gave about just kind of like have all those choices and those options, because I agree. Like, I try to put a little bit of work into everything I do so that like when I do graduate, it's like, I can go this way, I could go that way, I could do both of these things. Like, right now I'm in school, but I also work in elementary school. I babysit, I do my podcast. Like, I kind of just feel a little water everywhere because I'm in my young 20s and I'm grateful that I can do that. And that way you're kind of opening the doors. I want to kind of go into more of like the man and woman comparison, because I do think it's so interesting, because you have alpha women that want to take control and provide and be the breadwinners of the house. And then you have men that don't allow that. And I kind of want to talk about, when it comes to being in your 20s, like getting into relationships, why do you feel that women are more so kind of looking for that in their 20s? Obviously, this is just generally speaking, this is not for every woman listening, but why do you feel like women are kind of ready before men? And why do you think it's so much harder for a man to commit than a woman when it comes to getting into a relationship?
So I really like what you're asking me there. And I don't know if it is harder for a man to commit. It's the only thing I'd say. I think that there's just, what I would say is, again, a little bit like the male mental health thing that we touched on about men and working. I don't know that there's the same level of like community for them to sort of have a space to talk about this and just share what's normal or what's happening, or, you know, what should I do in this situation? I think it's much better, the conversation, but I don't know how like practical it is for guys, you know, that they can apply to certain situations. I think it's quite a minefield for men as well. I think they have to be extremely respectful, careful about, you know, even sort of putting themselves out there. So I think that there is good, I think it's great, there's a lot more education in this space, but I think that could make the fear of rejection, which is the underlying fear that we all have, even more. And I went to a talk in London the other day, and we had the Married at First Sight, but it's the UK version. We had the matchmaker, an American guy, wonderful, Paul Brunson, but he's the UK on the UK series. And he was telling us about, you know, even trying to, like the dating figures, because he's on the board of Tinder, and kind of what people are looking for. And rejection really does sit behind all of the sort of, I think, issues with disconnection. And the other thing that Paul mentioned, which was music to my ears around dating, and I'll bring it back to girls as well, is that the reason that relationships don't work the number one reason that relationships don't work and dating is so hard is unhealed trauma. That's why. So I think that, again, if we look at male and female, and I'm being so generalistic, I'm really generalizing. If we look at like the support, the community, the conversations, the kind of chats you're having with friends, like girlfriends together versus men, we as women are more likely to go into detail about trauma. And thank goodness there's a lot more language, trauma and mental health, and it's becoming normalized to talk about it. But I think still for men, it's not quite at the level that we are. Like, you're right. Yeah. You know, I had a session with a client earlier, chat in the States, who I adore. And he got emotional on the call and he apologized to me twice on the call. You know, obviously felt a little bit embarrassed. And I was like, no. Like, I am honored that our relationship is to this place, that you were able to share that with me, and please know how important it is that you can model that for other men in your life, in your community moving forward, because men need that space to be able to share and be emotional. So I think that if there's unhealed trauma being the number one reason why relationships aren't working, I don't know that men are as engaged, maybe as progressed in as a collective in that space, and have perhaps the same interactions that we do as women. And like I said, I'm being super generalizing here. Yeah. And as women, I think to your point, you just mentioned you've got a peer group, okay, like from, you know, your community, but that are doing it young. So we've always got this like messaging, and we grow up with Disney films, for heaven's sake, like, and they're 16 and getting married. I'm the first guy in the woods. Well, you'll do. You're singing a song. Let's get married. You're a hot biscuit. You're a prince. Like, perfect. You know, so we grow up with this, like, what will your wedding be like, and, you know, all of these kind of like, everyone's got a Pinterest, and, you know, all these sorts of things. And I do think there is a lot more just narrative that we come with, you know, movies and rom-coms and someone gets married in it, you know, even the sort of teen movies and stuff like that. So there's always an underlying romantic element in these films, like even in Harry Potter and Twilight there was like a romantic entanglement. Yeah. So I think in a lot of our culture and things that we're taking on, as in like popular culture, we maybe don't realize quite how much the narrative is perhaps like pulling us along there. And another thing that Paul Brunson mentioned in his talk last week was that if we want to change some maybe like unconscious bias, like say you're finding some pressure and you're seeing people around you getting married and you're like, doesn't feel like me, is that we can choose to consume different content, because we are the sum of the content we're consuming. So let's just say you're always trying to date a certain type and you're like, oh, they must be 6'1" and they must, or whatever, you know, like get this grade in college, or like no finance bros, or whatever it might be, you know, you might then say, well, actually, I want to open my mindset and start looking at different content and maybe following different music and things like that. And you're going to start expanding your range of things that you're maybe looking and choosing from. But unhealed trauma is the number one reason why we would be avoidant if we're looking at attachment styles, because the fear of intimacy is too much for us, and would be driving a wedge. And that when we get close, we want it, but then we get repelled because we're afraid of the pain. You know, anxiousness, which is the need to be soothed because we maybe didn't learn that soothing in our childhood. Disorganized, which is like literally you get the best of both worlds. You're doing both all the time. I'm anxious, I'm avoidant. And then the lovely secure people, which can just hold the space for all of the above. So all of this, though, is still linked from trauma. And generally speaking, again, is probably from somewhere, especially when we're in our early 20s, it's probably carrying through from childhood in some way.
Yeah. And I agree with what you said about men don't really have that safe space. Like, even with my show, I have female guests on. I have like a 90% female audience. This is kind of just how it is. It's like, I have some guys that'll reach out and be like, I listened to your show, and it makes me happy, because it's like, I'm glad that this could be a safe space for you. And I totally agree. I feel like men hide from their emotions a lot. And even like you were saying, a lot of men will go to women and say, I'm not ready for a relationship because of XYZ, but they don't really even know that it's, you know, hold on trauma, because they've never been able to express that. So as a woman that maybe really likes a guy, let's say I'm a girl, I really like this guy, and I can tell that he is not in touch with his emotions. I can tell that he's kind of not healed from past trauma or whatever it might be. When a guy like that tells a woman, I'm not ready for a relationship, what should the woman do, in the sense that she still wants him, she still cares about him, she still loves him, but she doesn't want to, she can't change his mind. You know, what does a woman do in that scenario?
You should believe him. You know, that is a hard, hard truth. But if he's saying, I am not ready And as much as that might be someone that you've got such, and believe me, I'm not saying this flippantly, like I've been there, you know, that if I love you enough, you'll be healed, you know. So like,
I can change him.
Change you. Oh, brilliant. New projects just for me. You know, like I'll make you better for the next woman that gets you. Yeah. No, it's when a person, I think this is Oprah, but when a person tells you who they are, like believe them. And also watch what they're doing, you know. But if this person is literally saying I am not ready for a relationship, that shouldn't be a challenge. That's not like hooray, like, you know, roll up my sleeves, here we go, I'm gonna lose 3 months of my life to this, like that should be a okay. If you want to hold some space for that, that's one thing, but that's not just waiting for his message. That's either continuing today or very much focusing on your, irrespective, always focusing on your own life, never ever, you know, finding yourself. I think again in your 20s, like we can have some of these early relationships and they can be really consuming and it's a lot of firsts and we're having like, you know, first flushes of love and different experiences, and it can feel kind of almost, well, it can be all the things, like truly it can be. But it can also, with that, we can not have maybe a benchmark for what's healthy or unhealthy, and allowing that things really do change. I think the rate of change for me when I look back at my 20s, like, you know, from sort of literally finishing through our college in the UK up to my burnout at 29, like the only thing that was the same about me was my name, honestly. Like, I mean, okay, my inherent values, but the things I was doing, the information I'd taken in, the life that I'd cultivated in like those 10 years. So a partner that would have been right for me at 21 would not have been right for me at 29, and wasn't, like, we get on very well, but that's now my ex-husband, you know, and who would not be right for me now. So if someone is saying to you, I don't want a relationship, we're not ready for a relationship, please believe them, because actually if they're being kind enough to be honest with you, and my goodness, sadly there are plenty of people that are not kind enough to be honest and haven't even bothered to think about the fact that they're not ready and just are doing it blindly and just hurting people wherever they go. I mean, that's the worst kind. But if someone, as much as it might hurt, is being decent enough to be honest with you, please believe them.
Yeah. And I think as women, we have such like a nurturing nature where when a guy says, I'm not ready, we're like, okay, great. And we want to jump on them 10 times more because we're like, I can help you through this. I can help you when you're stressed with work. I can help you through this and that and whatever. And for us, that's what we want to do because we're women and we have that motherly nature inside of us. But for a man, it's the opposite of that. And they want to be left alone because if they want to be the alpha, if they want to take care of the woman, they can't do that unless they've kind of taken care of themselves. And I think this is why dating in your 20s is such a weird time, because you have guys that matured very early and, you know, they want a relationship at a young time. They want to settle down at a young time. They maybe got fed a golden spoon at age 18 and they don't have to worry about things. They don't have to go to college and they could get married right away, you know? So it's so different for everyone. But I do think it's so interesting, man versus woman on the perspective. And something else I want to talk about is a woman being single in her 20s versus a man being single in the 20s, and how for a man, it's kind of, they see it as more of an advantage. They're like, I could do whatever I want. I can make my money, chase my money. But for majority of women, they're just searching for the man. It's like their day isn't fulfilled unless they have a crush on somebody, you know? It's like, as much as I, you know, love working and love building my business and making my money, I'm like, okay, I want to be a wife and a mom. You know, I feel like women obviously think about those things so much more. So what is your kind of perspective on a man being single in his 20s versus a woman being single in her 20s? Okay, you guys, you do not want to miss out on today's sponsor, Uncommon Goods. It's officially time to kickstart your holiday shopping, but there's no cause for panic. Uncommon Goods is here to make your holiday shopping stress-free by scouring the globe for the most remarkable and truly unique gifts for everyone on your list. Whether you're shopping for your mom, your dad, teenagers, in-laws, or your best friends, Uncommon Goods knows exactly what they want. My favorite gift that I found on their site is this olive oil dispenser where you pour the olive oil in and it's so beautiful. It's this like blue marble and it's so unique and it's made by small artists. So when you do shop from them, you are supporting artists that are small and independent businesses. All the good products are made in small batches, so make sure you shop now before they sell out this holiday season. They have gifts from art and jewelry to kitchen, home and bar. They have something for everyone. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/from Eve. That's uncommongoods.com/from Eve for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary. I will link it in the description below. Make sure you guys get your hand on these products for holiday shopping. I promise you will be happy with your gifts.
I mean, I think you gave a great summary. I mean, there is just, let's be frank, less biological pressure. Like we do, as women, we do have this sense of, well, if I want to have a family and if I want to have a big family, and, you know, we have this, the timeline starts kind of coming down, and you have really helpful media outlets telling you that you're dried up and ruined by whatever, like 33 or something. Yeah. You know, like having, you know, kind of this, there is, you know, everyone calls it like the clock ticking, the biological clock, but there is, again, from, you know, not unrealistic sources from peers around you. What age were your parents? And like lovely, helpful family members remind you, when I was your age, oh, I've been married for two. I've had your uncle by then. You're like, oh, great, thanks.
Especially
like,
around just Thanksgiving and Christmas time. It's like,
right, which is this week. Yeah, you know, so, and then like, yeah, so there's an awful lot of pressure. And then that again is this comparison piece, which I really do think is very active in your 20s, because so that. The single thing as well is often to do with the people that you're around. So, you know, groups of friends, I think, again, in your 20s, I think you're really beginning to find your autonomy over that decade. So, I mean, I'm sure you do. Like, you tend to go out with the same friends all the time. You holiday with the same friends. Like, you vacation with them. You go out to girls' brunches, you know, or, and even a mixed group that maybe you all study together. Like, you're quite tight. And then people start getting partners outside of the group. And then someone gets a job in Singapore. And then, you know, something else happens, and people, and then it starts to sort of fragment and change, and then the system's changing, and we're kind of struggling to find ourselves, and maybe the role that we had in that group, maybe we're always like the socializer, or maybe we were always the hostess, and you're like, actually, this isn't really serving me anymore. So there's an awful lot of like finding autonomy and independence within the family, within friendship groups, within work systems as well, because if you are joining corporate, or whether you're starting your own business, you're starting, that's the point, you're starting, so then you're, you know, you're growing and you're checking in, and it's going to be another phase. So there's a, you know, that's me naming three areas. If we add in doing some healing work, some trauma stuff, like that's a lot of stuff to get done in 20s, right? And then you're trying to add in finding a meaningful, lasting relationship that will meet all of your values, be the best sort of, you know, partner that you could imagine in every way you could dream of, and make sure you get it right. Like, holy moly, that's a lot of pressure. I'm not saying it won't happen at all, but just I would be in, if somebody is feeling like they're running out of time, or they're late, or they're comparing themselves to their friends. I think in the UK the average age for marriage is 34 or 35, so you know, that's like, that's in London, I think, but that's the average, you know, sort of getting married or first child. It's not it's getting later, not earlier. And the divorce rates are coming down as well. Divorce rates are bottoming, which is a good thing too. It's good it's coming down. So people are also consciously selecting relationship now in a different way. Like, I don't know about your parents, when your grandparents got married, they probably got married more for you know securities of the families, like lovely people, loving people, but it may not have been, you're going to help me like grow as a person, you're the best human I've ever met, this is enlightening, it's going to fulfill all of my needs. That wasn't how it was. Yeah. And yet now, looking, you know, Esther Perel talks about this, we are the demands we have on a partner is so much greater. So I think women hold that information and almost that anxiety about getting it right. Whereas I think most groups of men, to your point, are probably more focused on making a dent in their career. You know, so the energy, the focus, the time, the people that they're socializing with as well are probably in that space. So I think it really is also a lot to do with who is your, you know, five people you're spending the most time with. Where are you getting your information from? Who is your mentor? Who is someone that you're like, you know, aspiring to be like? And if you're in certain industries, you're going to be looking for like, how do I get that guy's job, not how, you know, how can I get the car in the house, and then I'll find the one that fits it and create this security. I think you're quite right. I think generally that's what people want to do. So it's maybe coming at it from a different way, if you like. I think it meets in the middle, but possibly men and women come at it from a slightly different viewpoint.
Yeah, that was an amazing answer and an amazing explanation. And I think that so many just women or men listening to this can relate to that, depending from what background. Like, yeah, my great-grandparents were married at 16. Like, They were from the villages of Syria, married at 16. My parents got married in their early 20s. Like, things were just so different then. And I think times have just changed so much with even the pressure, like, just the job, the mental health space is just being talked about so much now, because like you said, during lockdown, it kind of gave everyone a moment to just be by themselves and be in their own company. And a lot of people got terrified of that. A lot of people were terrified being in their own company and just very scared of who they were when no one was around, when no distractions were around. And that's a very scary thing. Like, I know even for me, I was at such a low point when I didn't have, you know, a boyfriend with me or a friend with me or a family member. I was like, it's literally just me. And this is terrifying. Something I want to talk about as well is a woman leaving a relationship. Okay, I don't want to leave this secure lifestyle I have. So what is kind of your advice for a woman who might be in a relationship right now, whether it was a long-term relationship, whatever it is, where she knows that she's going to get the lifestyle that she wants, but she doesn't really know if it's the guy that's right for her. She doesn't know if she's getting treated how she deserves. How does she kind of find the courage to walk away from the life that she could have?
I did that. So, you know, I left my marriage without a, like, you know, knowing what would be on the other side of it, because to me, my ex deserved, we both deserved, we have a daughter together, and I didn't want us to dislike one another. And it was important that things finish before it got toxic. And also, you know, we're going to be in each other's lives forever because we've got a kid together. And it's important to try and be as respectful to this person as possible. So that's one lens to use. If you say, like, you feel really bad, like, he'll be devastated, oh my God, he'll never, I'm feel awful, blah, 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 blah. Like, a lens is, you know, I was saying earlier about if someone tells you they're not ready, it's actually a kindness. They're being kind, like, they're being kind enough to be honest. So one lens is, if you love that person and you really care about them, but you're just not in love with them, or you know it's not right, like, don't sort of take pity. The kindest thing you can do is be honest and, like, set them free so that both of you can find other people. So that's one lens. The lens of, like, lifestyle versus you know, like, sort of security, and I came from a place of being, you know, not needing to create security for myself versus it being wrong. What I would say, again, if I'm using the lens of being in your 20s to your listenership, whatever is not right now in a long-term relationship, as you get older, when you put children into the mix, let me tell you, that gap gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And if you, like, if you're not maybe having as much sex, if you're not, like, you know, those sorts of things, if those sorts of things have died off before those stages come in, they are not improving. So if you're not starting, nothing is perfect. So I'm not saying it must be, like, 100%, because that's just unrealistic, and life changes and people need help at different times. Like, we lose loved ones and we lose jobs and there's difficulty with friendships and maybe some health issues. So we have to have a container where we can support and be a team for one another. But if those fundamentals are not there and you're not happy before some of these really big life events, there are no amount of Chanel bags and holidays that make up for it. Honestly, like, it just, and the thing is, there's also no saying that he isn't somehow feeling that way, and then after, say, some children and something else, he doesn't go, actually, my secretary thinks I'm marvelous, thank you, and I'm off. Yeah. And then where's the lifestyle now, you know? And so it's, and I've seen a lot of that in both ways, by the way. I'm not man shaming or hating or anything like that. And I have a lot of male clients, and there's some really wicked women out there. So, you know, there's a lot all the ways. But what we do know from just clients and my work, the most important factor, I would say, because I think with women is where we really get into our heads. And we're like, oh, but this is really good. Oh, but that's really bad. Oh, but maybe that'll get better. Oh, but maybe if he moves there, this will work. Oh, we could get that house and maybe he'll be happier. And he's really stressed at work. So maybe if he did this, or his mum could move in. Or, like, I think we do a lot of that. And that's anxiety. Like, when you're up in your head and constantly trying to rationalize, like, that it, being not being present is anxiety, because we're usually in the future, like, catastrophizing or trying to plan and trying to control because we're trying to hold on to things and make it okay when it's not. But the thing that I think I've learned from clients, friends, looking across relationship for years and years and years, and being older, is that you need to really like your partner. And what I mean by that, like, lust and the chemicals are really easy, right? Early days, that's all made up for you. I actually think it's fairly easy to fall in love, because again, you've got some chemical help there, and like it's the first flushes of things and things are really exciting, and you know, like especially early 20s, you probably haven't got a lot of like responsibilities as such, and you know, life's quite fun and free and it's glorious.
Yeah.
To stay in like with somebody is actually quite hard, and liking someone means that it's really respectful. You know, you like your friends, like I love my friends, I would never be disrespectful towards friends, and that to me is the same in partnership. So I think that, you know, lust is chemically helped, falling in love, the first bit can also be chemically helped, but I don't think it's that hard. But the staying in like long term, so pick someone that you believe, and you'll work on the foundation that when stuff is hard, like I talked about some of those life events, we have enough like for one another that we're really going to be able to help each other through these things.
Yeah, I love that advice. And I do think it's just, you know, a lot of it is just patience, and a lot of it is just going through trial and error. And I know so many women that are in my DMs that I'm friends with that they just get sick of it and they're tired of the lessons. And even if, you know, I'm 23, my friends are around the same age as me, we're so young where like I even give my friends advice where they're like, I can't take another lesson. And I'm like, yes, you can, because you're only 21 years old. Like these are where the lessons are supposed to happen. Rather, you know, you're leading up to that. And I think for women, it could be so exhausting, and just like having a disappointment after disappointment, and expecting like getting into a new relationship and having a great first date. But in the back of your head, you're like, well, it's going to go downhill eventually. You know, we're so used to disappointment, and we're so kind of wired for that comfort of things not working out for us. But I love that advice you gave of just, you know, being in like with your partner, because I think when you're in like with your partner, you want to figure things out together. You truly don't want to lose each other. And you're like, whatever we do, we're going to do together. And, you know, problems get 10 times harder in a marriage. Your problems get 10 times bigger with marriage, and then probably 100 times bigger with kids. And it's like, if you're having those issues before, you know, you have a ring on your finger, I think it's a sign to step away, whether you're 25, 35, or 45, you know, you have to step away from that situation and realize that that lifestyle isn't worth it. You'd rather have nothing with your everything than everything with your nothing. And so I love that advice that you gave. For a woman that's single in her 20s, never had a boyfriend, how does she kind of hold on to that hope that there is someone out there for her? You know, whether she's 25 and never had a boyfriend, or 30 and never had a boyfriend, how does she kind of get out of the mindset that there's nothing wrong with her, you know, because at the end of the day, it's because she hasn't found her person. But how do you kind of get out of that mindset of there's nothing wrong with me, my person just hasn't come? Because it could be so hard and exhausting for a woman to see her friends moving on and her friends getting into a relationship while she's kind of just like at a standstill.
Yeah, I really get that. I mean, part of me is like, go on, girl, like your benchmark is so high. Like to me, that would say that your standards are high, your benchmark is high. And, you know, but also could potentially, obviously, we, you know, this is a hypothetical situation, but potentially, is that person genuinely open to relationship? Because maybe people are like, oh, I'm finding it hard to meet you. And you're like, what are you doing? You know, oh, well, I'm busy at work, or I'm doing this, or I'm like, well, I went to the gym. Like, well, where did you go to the gym? I went to Pilates. Men aren't, in, I know some do, but you know, like,
yeah,
guys aren't, they're in the waiting room. Like, are you, you know what, you know what I'm saying? Like, are you struggling to meet people and really no one's connecting with you? Or are you honestly putting yourself out there? And knowing that, I was listening to the day, and it was, I have to think of the research, but it was about how many times, so you're in a bar or a restaurant setting, it was about who makes the first move. And it's women, but it's with eye contact. So there'll be sort of a number of exchanges of eye contact, which effectively is the green light that then a man would have potentially the confidence to come over and just approach a woman. But it really is initiated by the female. Yeah. So, and then if you factor in that, say she's with a group of like 25 mates and he's there on his own, like, is he going to have the confidence to approach you in that setting? So, I mean, we could say, yes, absolutely, he should. He should, like, you know, career on over and be like, hey, I want to buy you a drink and you're the most beautiful woman in this room. And that's all rom-commy of us. But I think that there's something that we need to do, which is let go of the fairy tale of how things start. Because again, like, it could be a friendship. It could be a slow burn with someone that's like, you know, is coming out of a relationship, is doing some trauma healing. Someone's focusing on their life and dating. And that could end up in time being one of the most incredible relationships when it's the right time for both of those people. I think we have this like, oh, but we didn't meet then, or the first date was terrible, or I really didn't enjoy that, or I don't know, something bad happened on the second date, or I made myself, or we think there has to be this kind of perfect story towards relationship as well. And I don't think there is, because we're all coming from this place of experience, wounding what our families or our, you know, our view of relationship is. And we're bringing that in towards another person that's got, you know, a totally different experience to our own. And we're trying to sort of merge the two together. So I would say, yeah, how open is that person being? And I just want to circle back quickly to when you said about some of your friends being like, I can't take another lesson. Again, I get that. And, you know, but what I'd like to say is, to reframe it, that you're not losing something, you're gaining it. Because every single time that happens, I'm not being flippant, and I know it's exhausting, and I know you're like, I can't do anymore, you know, but if you reframe it that, right, what did I learn? Like, we never lose, we win, or we learn. That's what's happening here. So if that connection hasn't worked out, that's good for me, because it wasn't meant to. So I've saved my time. You know, we were talking about men and women, but are you in that time building significant foundations and taking leaps towards the career and the purpose of your choice? Are you investing in your family? Did you have something like a health crisis that you needed to focus on to make sure you weren't going to have issues in later life? Like, if you just sat around doing absolutely nothing and nothing's going well for you, like, we need to make some other inquiries here. But I think, again, that can be a societal thing. And the other thing I want to offer is, are you actually unhappy with that? Or is it a should, as in, like, you think you should have a relationship? Because I think there's a lot of people, again, we've got friends, like you say, and they're settling down. You're like, why don't I want that? Maybe I should do that. I tell you what I'll do. I'll go and get in a relationship so I can do that. And then you're there and you're like, oh God, I don't think I really want this.
Yeah.
You know, so, because I think there's a lot of, like, maybe we're all so different, and some people want to dedicate themselves to their career. For some people, career and work is maybe going to rank above, in a lot of regards, some of the fulfillment they get from romantic partners, and that's okay. Like, we're all made in different ways, but I think that there is a lot of, again, societal pressure, helpful comments from family members, things like that. But I would offer to people listening, just check in with yourself when you have, like, some of those negative things come to your head, and just ask yourself, is this mine? So when you're like, why have I never had a relationship, like, I'm failing, or why have I had another lesson? Like, is this mine? As in, is this my belief about myself? If so, that then we know that, okay, fine, we can take a step to improve our self-esteem, get some self-love, you know, whatever it might be. But a lot of the time, it's not yours. Like, it's something you heard, or someone said something, or it's because you saw some people last night that actually they might be lovely friends, but you get really triggered and they're not making you feel very good right now. Or guess what? Like we're saying, it's Thanksgiving week, and holy moly, that's going to bring a lot of stuff up for loads of people, you know, and you come away from there because cousin so-and-so's done it and we're going to their engagement party in a month, you know? So it's like, just check in. Is it yours?
I love that. And I think so many women need to hear that, because like you said, especially with the holidays, you're going to go to Christmas. Are you talking to anyone? Are you dating anyone? And it's like, you say no, and they're like, oh, it's okay. And it's like, yeah, I know it's okay. I'm okay with this. I'm happy with this. And I'm someone that's kind of just like, whatever chapter I'm given in life, I'm going to enjoy that chapter, whether I'm meant to be single right now, whether I'm meant to be in a relationship, whatever it is, I'm going to enjoy it. Despite what I might think I want or what I think I'm ready for, I know that when I'm actually ready for something, it will be given to me. It's not, I always say, you never have to chase what God is sending, and I never have to chase something that's meant to be mine. And you've answered everything so amazingly. I know everyone listening is just going to probably take notes on this and remind themselves of it next time they want to chase a guy. So I love all the advice you gave. Something I like to end every episode off with a guest is asking, what is a quote that you live by? Your favorite quote, just something that you have to remind yourself of all the time.
Sure. So I might get this a little bit wrong, so forgive me, everyone, but it's Proust, who was a beautiful sort of figure in literature. And it's, the real voyage of discovery is not in seeing new landscapes, but in having new eyes.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, I feel like especially your 20s and your 30s, you're just like, you're constantly, you're not the same person that you were yesterday, you know, like you wake up every morning and you get to meet a new version of yourself. And it's so exciting to just meet that version of yourself and spend time with her and just like appreciate her. And you could have the same world in front of you your whole life, but when you view it differently, that's all that you need.
Exactly. Exactly.
Perfect. Okay, where can everyone find you, your socials? I'm going to have everything in the description anyways, but just so that they can hear it and hear more from you.
Thank you. So the biggest platform at the moment is Instagram, which is at Annalee Howling. Got a lovely community there, so please come on over. And there's a lot of, actually, there are even some posts on there about things I wish I'd known in my 20s. And I would say there's a, on my YouTube channel, which is also at Annalee Howling, there's a, I put on a free masterclass called Decoding Self-Love. And in it, for your listenership, which I think is lovely, we do a guided meditation where you get to meet your 70-year-old self. So you get to meet your older, wiser self, and she gives you wisdom and knowledge about your life now, who you are now, what happens in your future. It's stunning, completely free. It's on YouTube. It's like 45 minutes. And there's other tools and tips in there about self-love. So that's on YouTube, as well as a lot of the trauma pieces I've talked about there. And there'll be more content going on as well. And then TikTok as well, Annalee Howling.
Perfect. Thank you so much for coming on. I know everyone's definitely gonna be tapping in to hear more about you. You've been an amazing guest, and I just want to thank you so much for coming on.